is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump's first major act of his second term, pardons for 1,500 people in connection with the January 6th riot. Asked about pardoning and commuting sentences for those who had attacked law enforcement, he told reporters,
"I've been in jail for a long time already. I see murderers in this country get 2 years, 1 year, and maybe no time. So they've already been in jail for a long time. These people have been destroyed."
He also signed executive orders declaring an emergency at the southern border and taking the U.S. out of the World Health Organization. Dangerous cold impacting tens of millions of people. Snow is falling in areas of the country not used to snow, like New Orleans and parts of Texas. More than 2,000 flights have been canceled today. Another day of dangerous fire conditions as winds pick up in Southern California, and the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas holds, but Israel's top generals resigned, citing failures related to the October 7th attack. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Police have arrested a suspect in Sunday's shooting on La Crosse's north side. The LCPD said that a 28-year-old man was taken into custody during a traffic stop Sunday evening. The shooting victim, 42-year-old Justin Betts, died from his wounds at a hospital in La Crosse. The two men had an argument before the shooting. The 28-year-old suspect is being held on a $1 million cash bond, according to online court records. He wasn't charged on Monday due to the holiday, but is being held on a charge of first-degree intentional homicide. The emergency day center in La Crosse will have extended hours today due to the extremely cold temperatures we're having. It's located at La Crosse's Public Library's main branch and runs until 7 p.m. It's open to anybody who's looking to get out of the cold weather and will be staffed by people from both the city and county. Anyone needing to use the day shelter will have to follow a set of rules and check in and out, and access to the main library is only available during open library hours. A Wisconsin man is among the people pardoned by an executive order signed by President Donald Trump yesterday. With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
A Pulaski man will benefit from an executive order signed by President Donald Trump during his first few hours in office yesterday.
So this is January 6th. These are the hostages. Approximately 1,500 for a pardon.
Yes.
Full pardon.
One of those pardoned is Riley Casper of Pulaski, who was sentenced to 37 months in prison for assaulting police officers at the Capitol.
Several of those pardoned have already been released from custody. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will give the annual State of the State address tomorrow. Tune in to WLCX for special coverage of the speech, the Republican legislative response, and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Join Civic Media's Todd Alba, political editor Dan Schaefer, members of the Civic Media News Team, and Up North News Radio's Pat Kreitloaf for special live coverage, which begins just before 7 p.m. across the Civic Media Network and on the free Civic Media app.
I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
The Bucks at midseason. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Bucks are at the halfway point of the regular season. 41 games completed, 41 to go. The Bucks are 24-17 so far, thanks to having just won four in a row at home. And they're in fourth place in the Eastern Conference behind Cleveland, Boston, and New York. Bucks forward, Chris Middleton.
Yeah, with the up and down season that we've had so far, I think we'll take it. Knowing that, you know, we could be better in a lot of different areas. There's a lot of games I think we dropped that we thought we should have won. But to be 7 games over 500 with, you know, all the highs and lows, I think we'll take it right now. Hopefully, you know, we keep getting those wins up and getting a higher win percentage.
The Bucks on the road tomorrow night in New Orleans against the Pelicans. Tip-off time, 7 o'clock. NFL, the Chicago Bears have a new head coach, 38-year-old Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions. And the Ohio State Buckeyes, the new national champions of college football after beating Notre Dame 34-23. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
This bitter, brutal cold snap ends today. It's cold this morning, but we are going to climb into the single digits as we head into this afternoon. Temperatures will climb tonight with a little off and on light snow. Overnight tonight into tomorrow could get a half inch to an inch, and then warming into the 20s by tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 14 below zero.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Pete Hegseth, confirmation hearing.
I've never disparaged women serving in the military.
Except for, you know, the podcast interview in like late November of 2024 when he said women in combat weaken the military. Except for that, Pete, did you get body snatched? Are you not the same guy that sat down in the Brosphere podcast?
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, we go overtime with Maggie Dawn. Plus, when did Republicans embrace rule by executive order? We dive in with John Nichols from the Cap Times and Nation Magazine. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you. Governor Tony Evers will give the annual State of the State address this Wednesday, January 22nd at 7 p.m. Tune in to Civic Media for special coverage of the speech. The Republican legislative response and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Join Civic Media's Todd Alba, political editor Dan Schaefer, members of the Civic Media news team, and Up North News Radio Pat's Kreitlow for special live coverage of the 2025 State of the State Address. Find out what Wisconsinites can expect from our state government this year from Governor Tony Evers and Republican legislative leaders. Special coverage begins just before 7 p.m. with coverage across Civic Media Network, News Talk Network, and on the Civic Media app. So, Sandy, let's get into the dismantling of diversity, equity, and inclusion. The administration will take steps to roll back federal support for racial equity and protections for transgender people. President Trump on Monday ordered his administration to gut policies instituted under the Biden administration to prevent discrimination against transgender Americans and dismantle federal programs that promote diversity, equity, and inclusion. Sandy, I will say to you as a 70-year-old black man who's lived in America my entire life and who knows the history of the civil rights movement and who knows about the history of our nation and what transpired in the founding of this nation, and to look at it and some of the strides that were made during the 60s and the civil rights struggle and the fight that my parents and others put up just to make it possible for people of color to be able to sit down at a lunch counter, to drink out of a water bubbler, the same water bubbler, to go to the toilet, to be buried in the same cemeteries. All of those things happen in this country, and they're documented. And so they occurred. And so when, as a now middle-aged man.
Hey, Earl, we're beyond middle-aged.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
Just helping you.
As an, okay. Well, don't, as an older guy.
Yeah, there you
okay.
go.
Okay. Yeah. As an older guy, to watch those things being dismantled, Sandy, I am outraged. And the fact that there's so many in this country who agree with that and saying that, okay, we understand it's discriminatory, DEI is discriminatory, and so it's not fair, it's not right. And I say to that, 400 years of discrimination was not right.
Well, incidentally, DEI really isn't. Most of the programs are not, don't involve any required actions other than education. Much of DEI is an effort to simply educate people about what it is that might be involved with hidden bias and with the underlying causes of the kinds of things that relate today to unequal opportunities. And, you know, the vestiges of what you describe exist in some very tangible ways. I was involved working for a bank making mortgage loans in the 60s during the time when I was in school. And we had a map that showed us where we shouldn't make mortgage loans. And it was the red line map. And it was actually a red line map that I think was created by Fannie Mae, which was a quasi-federal organization that said, don't make loans here because we won't. And it was what has become Milwaukee's inner city. It created the segregation in our housing that exists today, to this day, as the result of the echo effect of that very concept, which wasn't just the implicit racism, but it was actually explicit profiling that was done. And so, you know, we have many vestiges of that problem. And I, for one, lived through the whole thing myself. And looking at it from the other side of this mirror, I would say that today things feel worse than they did 20 years ago. There was the time when Obama was elected where we thought we were in post-racial America. It's not post-racial, it's re-racial America, I think, that we currently live in. And so I think that we have work to do, and we have continued to have work to do. But, you know, this executive order that was discussed, it's interesting that they describe it as an executive order designed to remove the favorite the government programs involved with, and the first thing they mention is
transgender,
and then they mention race, which of course DEI is fundamentally about race. Transgender and the whole gender issue is a very, very minor, small portion of that, just based on the numbers of people involved in it. But transgender is the one that seems to catch everyone's eye and catch everyone's ire, and then they want to kind of slip under the rug there, the whole aspect of it that really relates to race. And, you know, it's very concerning, I think. I understand your outrage, and I think we ought to talk about that some more, because I think the world needs to understand what it feels like to a black person to have this kind of discussion by white America about the problems they have with a program called DEI.
You know, Sandy, Dr. King talked about white backlash, and white backlash existed during the civil rights struggle. Whites who raised up against what was going on and pushed back and didn't want to see those things change. Well, today, when we're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, there's white backlash. Because whites are saying, wait a minute, you're discriminating against us, and you don't level the playing field by discriminating. Well, I'll say to many, and our phone lines are open at 855-752-4842. This is not a comfortable conversation for many whites. All whites aren't a part of this, but there's a segment who are. And so to act as if things, I'll tell you, you talked about Fannie Mae. In 1980 or so, Sandy, American Family Insurance was sued for refusing to insure black homes. As recent as 1980s. And they were sued, and they left the city, and then they came back after they had to pay, you know, for being exposed for what they had done. Now, I get it. There are people who think that, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion has caused a lot of damage to many whites, and so as you talked about in going to schools.
Well, I'm not sure, you know, you say it has caused much damage. I think that's the school I went to long ago, Harvard College, the makeup of its class has changed substantially since I went there. I had an African American roommate he was one of 14 African Americans in the class of 1966 at Harvard University. Now there are many more than that, but there ought to have been many more than that then. And, you know, so the recognition of the value that can be brought to a group setting like a university of people of all different backgrounds is fundamental to part of the education process. And so universities have, yes, changed the way they address the applicants to their schools, and they've attempted to create a diverse population that will be more educational to all of those partaking in the education. Does that have an effect on the ability of a white American to get into the school? Well, maybe. But is it a function of a loss of meritocracy? No, they're still measuring merit. They're measuring merit as far as the university climate is concerned and what the university wants to achieve. And they also recognize that the way that merit has been tested in our society, for instance, test scores or GPA, isn't necessarily a reflection of the merit that individual have in terms of their probable success in the world. And so, you know, DEI, much like critical race theory, have been our initials, an acronym that has developed a reputation that isn't consistent with what it actually stands for. Now, DEI is a much more passive principle. It really relates much more to education than it does to action.
Well, you know, Sandy, if you look at...
And by education, I don't mean educational institutions. No. It means teaching, for instance, within a corporation, teaching...
The differences that exist in
people. The differences that exist, yes,
well,
and understanding them.
You know, Sandy, this thing that, you know, whites are being turned away in these major Ivy League schools because... You know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. I would say that any black person who's been admitted or given an opportunity to go to a Harvard or a Yale or Princeton is not some guy who's there or girl because of DEI. They certainly are bright enough to succeed in that environment, or they wouldn't be there. Let's be clear with that. The other side of it is. Many of the Asians who also are there because clearly their grades might outstripe many of the whites.
Oh, and maybe some of the whites are there because they were wealthy enough to go to Exeter Academy and get in that way. You know, so, I mean, yeah, there's all different criteria and all different...
But we don't hear all that aspect of it. We only hear these other anecdotes.
Yeah, but this notion that we're losing our meritocracy.
All right, 855-752-4842. Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
Eagle 1490 AM.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In the first week of the new session of the Wisconsin State Legislature, Republicans fast-tracked a measure that would put a question on the ballot in the upcoming spring election that would enshrine voter ID in the state constitution. Two things on this. First, it is telling that Republicans made this their very first order of business. Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein responded to this, saying it's not cost of living or health care or gun violence that Republicans wanted to focus on, but a constitutional amendment. Telling, isn't it? But that leads to the second piece. Republicans are clearly doing this for politically motivated reasons. By having this on the spring election ballot, they're betting it will make it more likely that people who showed up to vote for Donald Trump in November will be heading to the polls to help elect right-wing candidate Brad Schimmel to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That election is on April 1st, so buckle up.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Central heat, you know, the HVAC systems that heat your entire house. Man, those can really cost us an arm and a leg. And they lose up to 30% of their energy through the ductwork, plus more when we're heating rooms that we aren't even using. Well, one trick that can bring down your heating bill is to lower your thermostat and use energy-efficient space heaters where you really need the heat. I'm a little retro and I like radiant heaters. Those are heaters that just heat a specific area in a room. On average, running a 1500 watt space heater is going to cost you about 20 cents an hour. While running your central electric furnace, that's going to run you $1.37 an hour. So space heaters can mean real savings. However, if you use a space heater, make sure you follow the directions for their safe use. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. The next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
Waking up in my college dorm. Yeah, my life, it was pretty normal. Looking for a date to the spring formal. Wasn't worried about nothing else, no. Majoring in undecided. Notebooks full of bad songs I was writing. Never dreamed anybody else would like them. Now they're sitting on a Walmart shelf. Ain't it funny how life changes? You wake up, ain't nothing the same. And life changes. You can't stop it, just stop.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host, Sandy Winview, and Sandy the Music.
Well, just like this music said, life changes. It's looking at the perspective of we've got a life to live. We've got to figure out what we're going to do, what we stand for. We've got to face up to the life that the whatever life presents us.
All right, let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. Yesterday was a beautiful day. Heard President number 47 speak that he has the same dream as Martin Luther King. The end of...
Hey, well, you know what? I didn't hear that. I heard Dr. King speak. I know of what was in his heart and what he attempted to do. And I heard I heard Donald Trump speak. And they're as far and them and their understanding of people and wanting to bring people together as far away from the sun as to Pluto.
Well, you know, listen to you guys last hour, and your party was okay with the tech oligarchs when they supported Biden. Zuckerberg spent over $400 million trying to get Biden.
He didn't have an office in the White House, CJ. He wasn't in charge. He wasn't in charge of impacting the federal government and making decisions to impact the government.
You know how much money the military spent on DEI? They asked for $114 million.
Hey, CJ, what is DEI? Yeah. Your definition. CJ, what is your definition of DEI?
Division, exclusion, and indoctrination. That's what it is.
Okay. Well, clearly you don't have any understanding of what it is. That's not what it is. That's your interpretation. It's 100% inaccurate.
You've got to keep people in groups. That's what you have to do. Drive racism. That's what your party's all about.
CJ, that's, you know, thank you very much for the call. Well, you know, there are people who agree with CJ, by the way.
Well, I think the problem is that as soon as something is reduced to an acronym and isn't described or discussed in terms of its content, it's subject to being mocked or put into calumny in the manner that we just heard. Now, $114 million by a military that spends $850 billion is actually a pretty small number. $114 million, when you consider that there are 2 million employees associated in the Department of Defense, means that they spent, what, $57 per employee on this? So, I mean, it's, you know, it's not a huge number, in fact. But secondly, I think that the content of what it is that is involved with DEI should have been discussed and should be discussed, because it actually is pretty easy to understand and to evaluate, and it loses a good deal of this kind of acrimony associated with it if it's understood. Many corporations are continuing to use DEI. Many corporations use DEI without any legal requirement that they do so whatsoever. There is no legal requirement for DEI in most of corporate America. It has been adopted through the human relations principles because each company believes that it's good for the interests of the company to adopt it.
So, Sandy, why do you think that this was, of all of the executive orders and the priority and the importance that President Trump saw, that this found its way amongst all these others? Why did DEI have a seat at the table?
Well, I think you ask a very good question. Why is it that something designed to try to improve relations, improve opportunities, and to improve the environment in work situations, why would that be a focus? And it's interesting because obviously, I think off the air when we started talking about this, you talked about the fact that the majority of America is white, and the majority rules in a democracy. And apparently, this whole concept of DEI seems to fly in the face of the interests of white America, and it gets them very disturbed. But it's interesting to me that the things that they paint, they start out with transgender issues in the discussion, and then in the background they talk about the race issue, when in fact race is the underpinnings of DEI, and the transgender issue is a very small piece of the pie.
So, Sandy, that's it in a nutshell. And so that's the part of it that angers me, because when they preface it, because at the beginning of this article in today's New York Times, it says the administration will take steps to roll back federal support for transgender people and racial equity. But transgender first.
Yeah, I know.
And people bought into that.
Well, they stepped into the trap because that's the way the press release was written by the White House. And, you know, that's the shiny object that can be used to deflect attention from the prospect that this is actually about race, and that the bulk of DEI programs are all about that. And too much paid to the notion that transgenderism is what it's all about, when in fact that's not the case.
You know, Sandy, I want to delve deeper, because you and I and many others saw when this reared its head before the campaign even began, the critical race theory. All of those things all were put out there, and people bought into all of those things, and it led us to where we are now. 855-752-4842 is the number. Our phone lines are open. Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Susan Crawford was in western Wisconsin yesterday to meet with potential voters. Crawford made visits to Richland Center and Viroqua. Earlier in the day, she was in southeastern Wisconsin. Crawford said her campaign was focused on protecting people's rights and upholding the Constitution. She'll face conservative-backed Brad Schimmel on the April 1st statewide election for the officially nonpartisan office. It's expected to be the most expensive judicial race in history. Gas prices spiked ahead of President Donald Trump's inauguration. With more, here's Civic Media's Melissa Kay.
Gas prices rose 13.3 cents during the last week. The average across the state is $2.93 today. This is 9.5 cents higher than a month ago and over 22.5 cents per gallon higher than this time last year. The national average also rose during the last week, with that average at $3.09 today. Oil prices have reached their highest level since July, driving the national average up. Officials at Gas Buddy say with President Trump's inauguration this week, there could be price impacts depending on the executive orders he is preparing to sign. They will be closely monitoring potential impacts with the threat of tariffs and possible retribution from Canada. Higher prices could begin in a few weeks anyway, with the traditional seasonal rise, aside from what President Trump decides to do from the Oval Office.
Prices are trending locally higher than the statewide average, with some locations now topping $3 per gallon in the Cooley region. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will give the annual State of the State address tomorrow. Tune in to WLCX for special coverage of the speech, the Republican legislative response, and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Join Civic Media's Todd Alba, political editor Dan Schaefer, members of the Civic Media News team, and Up North News Radio's Pat Kreitlow for special live coverage, which begins just before 7 p.m. across the Civic Media Network and on the free Civic Media app.
You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now at civicmedia.us/app. I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Comedian Dave Chappelle has made a living being funny and controversial, which is tough to do. On last weekend's Saturday Night Live, the comedian said he was tired of being controversial. During his fourth time hosting the show, Chappelle wished new President Trump good luck, joked about the LA fires, and at one point said he was never invited to a Diddy party, adding that that is a hard way to find out you're ugly. He might be tired of being controversial, but it will be interesting to see if he can avoid those urges over the next 4 years. Awards season is heating up, even for the lesser-known award events. Saudi Arabia's Joy Awards took place over the weekend and had some serious star power in attendance. Morgan Freeman was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award, which was presented by Anthony Hopkins. Matthew McConaughey was given the award for Best Personality, which is really impressive given that he makes the absolute worst commercials. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
This bitter, brutal cold snap ends today. It's cold this morning, but we are going to climb into the single digits as we head into this afternoon. Temperatures will climb tonight with a little off and on light snow overnight tonight into tomorrow. Could get a half inch to an inch, and then warming into the 20s by tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, 13 below zero.
Matt and Air on Air.
Robotaxis made by Zooks are slated to hit the streets of California later on this year. Rides will initially be free for people who agree to test it out. You go first.
Wait, have you ever wanted to drive in a four-person casket with no driver?
My biggest sticking point about this is the name. Zooks is a cartoon character.
Yeah. Do you think when he's driving, he's going...
Matt and Air on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Luke Mathers joins us now.
The Bucks were playing, the Badgers were hosting Minnesota, and I couldn't get either of those games on YouTube TV.
Years later, they're going to look back at this and go, oh my God, how did you guys get through it? I mean,
things don't happen in a vacuum, though, and you have to elect people that will break up these giant monopolies and allow us to watch our favorite teams in peace.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow, weekday morning 6 until 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, some communities considering getting rid of fluoride. What would this mean for you? Brought to you by Big Cavity. We'll kick it around tomorrow. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
At first I was afraid. I was better.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays. And my co-host, Sandy Waves. Sandy, the music.
Yeah, just about. Let's take what's served to us. Let's stand for something. Let's go ahead and get things accomplished.
Sandy, there's so many things going on right now simultaneously. The ceasefire in Gaza. Sandy, I couldn't help but look at, all of the visuals. And what I saw were thousands and thousands of Hamas fighters out in the open celebrating with Palestinians. And I thought they had eradicated Hamas. All of this destruction and killing of many innocent people under the guise that we're going to destroy Hamas. That's constantly, and they're not going to be allowed to come back into God. These are words that were repeated over and over and over.
Well, when you think about it, who were they negotiating with but Hamas, right? I mean, Hamas right. was sitting at the other side of the table, had to agree to the ceasefire. Hamas is an entity that exists, whether Israel wants them or not. Interestingly, Hamas is an entity that exists because probably of the oppression that has been experienced in Gaza, and it's able to recruit people for that reason. Yes, it might be supported by Iran and other third parties, but it obviously has a willing group of participants within it. And what has happened over the last year has undoubtedly strengthened the ability of Hamas to go out and recruit as it has in the past. So, the principle that Netanyahu announced that he was going to eradicate Hamas, get rid of every last vestige of it, hasn't happened, probably can't happen. It's kind of impossible to find an embedded enemy like that. The lessons of history have been that guerrilla warfare is almost impossible to conquer to the extent that there is an excited populace interested in participating in the guerrilla warfare. But my hope is that they can move this in the right direction. But now the question is, what happens? I mean, Gaza is destroyed. I mean, it looks like the Palisades right. fire in California. So it needs to be rebuilt. These people need to find a place to live. They need to figure out a sustainable political structure for the Palestinians so that they can coexist with the Israelis. I mean, we're kind of back to square one where we've been forever, and they need to figure this out, And so my concern is, are they going to figure it out or not? Can a Netanyahu government be the vehicle in which this is figured out? I think the premise has always been, or the thought has always been, the prediction has always been, that when the fighting stops in Gaza, the Netanyahu government would be supplanted by something else. And so we're going to have to wait and see.
So who are they going to negotiate with? Israel. Who clearly they can talk as they've been talking to the different peace brokers. But in the end, they're going to have to talk to the people on the ground, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're fighting somebody. And that somebody has to agree to a ceasefire, and so there is somebody on the other side of the table.
Representing Hamas.
Representing Hamas and the fighters that are a part of this Hamas brigade. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a reality, and I guess I just don't understand the world suggesting to themselves that they could ignore that reality.
You know, Sandy, you said this, war's been going on, what?
A year.
Well over a year.
Yeah.
Early on, I remember us having conversations on the air and you saying they're not going to be able to wipe out Hamas. Now, they've dropped every weapon known to man except for nuclear weapons. They've leveled it. They've flooded all the tunnels. They've done everything. And yet, Hamas is still there. it's going to always be there. Is it safe to say?
Well, there's going to be something there that is the government of the Palestinians, whether it be this de facto entity, the Palestine, which is now some kind of protectorate. It's hard to say exactly what Palestine is today. But, yeah, and the notion that they would have a negotiated settlement means they were negotiating with somebody, and it's the somebody they were fighting. So that somebody exists, and there's no doubt that that somebody has the capacity to continue to recruit young men and women into their ranks, and I'm sure that that recruitment has, in some respects, been facilitated by what's happened over the last year.
You know, Sandy, not only recruit them, but they all had on the same uniforms.
Well, you know,
they all had weapons.
Yeah, well, they're supported by third parties. There's no question about that. There is no military production capacity to speak of within within the confines of Gaza or the West Bank. But and so that third party support, yes. But look, this is the Mideast. This is a conflict that has been ongoing for 60 years, 70 years, and 75 years and longer. And so this is not something that is simply going to get eliminated with the snap of a finger.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty
because
sure.
I heard the new president, incoming president, say the Middle East is going to be fixed.
Well, that's a formula that has yet to be ascertained exactly. There's, you know, equilibrium could come closer to existing in the Mideast if the right parties decide that they want it to occur, but it's definitely going to have to include Iran as one of those parties. And so the diplomacy with Iran fell apart almost completely under the first Trump administration. And how Iran gets handled is going to be a real issue.
So while we're talking about that, Ukraine wasn't talked about. It's still there. They're still fighting, and heavily. What are your thoughts about the direction that our nation goes with Ukraine now?
Well, my view has always been that Ukraine is moving closer to settlement. I realize the war has been gone on longer than I would have predicted, but wars end. Wars, particularly wars of attrition, end. And there haven't been many wars that have gone on other than like the Afghan skirmish that we participated in forever, 20 years. But this is a full-blown trench-embedded warfare and hundreds of thousands of people dying on both sides. I do predict it will end in 2025. I think it would have ended in 2025 on a Biden watch or a Harris watch, and I think it's going to end on a Trump watch in some fashion because it can't go on forever.
So do you think that as they sit down,
Zelensky.
Yeah. Do you think that Zelensky is going to be more willing to sit down now that Joe Biden, who clearly financially supported them and was really almost single-handedly made sure that they had the top weapons created to fight back against Russia, to even reach into Russia? Do you think that Zelensky knows that he's not going to be receiving that kind of support, and it makes it easier for him now to capitulate?
Well, I think I don't understand all the machinations of the government inside of Ukraine. I do know that the ultra-nationalists had control and had a lot to say about policies, and that Zelensky was beholden to them in that regard based on the nature of the organization of their government. But I think that the reality is going to end up being the reality that existed in 2021 before the war started, which is that I think that Russia is going to insist on having recognition of its ownership of Crimea, and that it's going to get control over the Donbas region, which is the western region of Ukraine, which has been the place of all the fighting. And I think that the fact that the fighting has localized there, it further demonstrates that that's the area of Ukraine that Russia truly cares about. And I think what will happen is that Ukraine will be a neutral country with with protections that are adequate to assure it against further incursions by Russia, and that it will give up some territory. And I think that's the way it's going to happen.
Will those protections come in assurance from protections for protections under the new president?
Well, I think the protections, quite frankly, will be promised by the European
NATO.
The European countries of NATO. I think that's what Trump has said he wants. I think that's probably what will happen. But I think that will be probably a sufficient promise for Russia to be restrained and for people to believe that Russia will be restrained from any further incursions.
So the rebuilding of Ukraine, which clearly I think if Joe Biden was still the president, would have, you know, the United States would play some role in that.
Well, I think the rebuilding of Ukraine will probably be a private commercial endeavor, quite frankly. I think there will be some government funding grants from other countries, some loans probably from other countries. But Ukraine, in a protected but neutral status, maybe as a member of the European Union, is probably a very valuable place, and there will be a good deal of investment interest.
So let me ask you about our...
And incidentally, most of the destruction of Ukraine has occurred in the Donbas region, which, if Russia takes control of that, will be Russia's problem, not Europe's problem.
So let me... Part of, Ukraine and our relationship, under Joe Biden, certainly favorable. And our relationship with Russia under Joe Biden, not favorable. Our relationship with Russia under Donald Trump was favorable.
Well, it was marginal. I mean, he claimed to have this great relationship with Putin, but there was an ongoing sanction program that was a continuation of the Obama established sanctions that were the result of the Crimea takeover by Russia in 2014. I predict that Trump will try to reestablish relations with Russia and will try to drop the sanction process because commercially sanctions are difficult in Europe, but also commercially, I think Donald Trump still wants to have a hotel in Moscow. I'm not joking about that. I honestly think that might be a big factor.
You know, Sandy, I know you're not joking, but they have to laugh sometimes to keep from crying.
Yeah.
Because the truth of the matter is, you look at this and his so-called relationship with Vladimir Putin doesn't think very highly of it.
I think it's much like the relationship of Mortimer Snerd and Charlie McCarthy. And the audience doesn't understand, Mortimer Snerd was a puppet.
Yeah.
And Charlie McCarthy was the
puppet master. Yeah.
Puppet master.
Yeah. All right. 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842.
And people should Google, I picked Mortimer Snerd rather than the other alternative puppet for a good reason.
All right. We're going to continue the conversation. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down. Slower.
iZurvey is proven to slow GA progression.
iZurvey gets GA
Pay going slower.
Izervay or Avacincaptad Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
Hi, I'm Samuel L. Jackson. When the UNCL, the United Negro College Fund, was founded 80 years ago, they hoped that they could change this nation for the better, and they have. As a proud alum of an HBCU, Morehouse College, I'm an advocate for HBCU. I support the work that UNCF does for students of color, scholarship, and internship for 50,000 deserving students each year. Visit uncf.org today, and remember, a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Jack Smith's report. Maggie, prosecutors considered charging Trump with inciting insurrection, but didn't.
There's an old saying, if you shoot at the king, don't miss. If it's someone who's really powerful or really rich, I gotta be absolutely certain I can prove every charge beyond a reasonable doubt. When it's people that don't have means, then it's I'll throw every conceivable charge at you.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Takes a little while to get into it, but I love this. Is that Queen?
No, it's R.E.M., I think.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752.
No, I'm sorry, Aerosmith.
Aerosmith, 4842. General Senator Tillis, Trump pardons Ray's legitimate safety issue. GOP Senate, Senator Tillis. Anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, and that's a Republican from North Carolina. Where am I at? Oh, I was just reading this breaking news. But welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. I mean, Tuesday's with Sandy. So, Sandy, so what's going to happen? Are we going to all of a sudden do away with all these deficits?
Well, you know,
is Trump going to fix all that?
You know, I've talked to some friends of mine who undoubtedly voted for Trump and are seemingly kind of excited about the prospect. What they all want to talk about is the notion that they're finally going to find someone who's going to take on the government establishment, the old line Republicans and old line Democrats who've been spending money profligately, irresponsibly, running up deficits, and that now this Doge committee maybe promises to change things. Well, number one, they're ignoring the fact that Donald Trump, in his first four years in office, ran record deficits for any president during his first four years. Secondly, the Republican record is obviously very bad. But if they think they're going to break from the Republican establishment, I think that they're just, you know, this is an illusory kind of a hope and an illusory promise. The first thing that's being talked about is the implementation of a tax reduction, and then later to try and follow up with processes to reduce costs. But you know, reducing costs means reducing programs, and reducing programs means dealing with the people who have an interest in programs. And so, for instance, you mentioned that there was possibly going to be an executive order issued today about the SNAP program.
Yes.
Well, there are more rural SNAP recipients. More money flows to rural SNAP recipients than to urban SNAP recipients. So there are probably more red voters than blue voters affected by that. And that's just an example. But most of what they talk about being waste is not inefficiency in government. It's actual programs in government that they want to wash away, they want to eliminate, without talking about which programs they are. These programs all got enacted for a reason. And, you know, to the extent that they want to get at waste, like inefficiency waste, they're going to have to dip their hands deep into the Defense Department budget, because everyone knows that there's a great deal of inefficient waste embedded in the Defense Department budget. Nobody thinks that there's a lot of inefficiency in the Social Security budget or in the Medicare budget. And so they're going to have to dip into programs and to eliminate actual programs.
They don't want to. Donald Trump said he wants to rebuild the military. He doesn't want them dickering with what's going on there. Let's go to Bob from Waukesha. Bob, thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hi, Earl.
Hello.
Well, the clown show has started. You know, Trump complains about the immigrants causing all this crime, but he pardoned all the domestic terrorists that participated in the insurrection. 1,500 of them are going to be back out on the street. It makes no sense. Trump's whole presidency, he makes no sense. He's nothing but a corrupt con man, and he's conning this whole country. That's all I got to say.
Hey, Bob, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, when they are talking about $800 billion, Elon Musk was talking about $800 billion in basic social programs, waste. And they're by God, we're going after the waste in those programs.
Well, if you call it waste, that would suggest that it's inefficiency. But he's not talking about inefficient waste. He's talking about programs that he disagrees with that need to be eliminated because he thinks the program is superfluous. And that's where this whole thing bogs down, because most of these programs were enacted for a reason, for a purpose. They have constituents for whom it matters. And the government is our group funding operation. It's the way that the people decide how they might commingle their money to solve problems that can only be solved jointly and can't be solved individually.
So let me ask you quickly then, because congressmen and senators have constituents who benefit by these programs. Are they going to be willing to cut those?
Well, that's been the problem. And I don't say it's a problem. That's the test that all this cutting needs to stand up to. And it's the reason why the lack of discipline in Washington has been Republican-led tax cuts in advance of any programmatic cuts. We had tax cuts during the war, a huge war expenditures under George Bush II. We had a tax cut under Trump without any programmatic cuts. That's been the reason for the substantial deficits. People can point at Bill Clinton as a point of surplus. Ever since then, it's been deficits.
All right, we got to leave it there. Thank you very much, Sandy. Thank everybody who made the show go. Up next, Jane Madner, Greg Bach. Madner on air. Stay warm. See you tomorrow.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm joined by author of The Meet the Parents Story, Laura Enright, and Meet the Parents creator, Greg Liana. Then herbalist Mason Hutchinson joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Hi, I'm Anthony Anderson. For the past 80 years, the United Negro College Fund has helped more than 500,000 students graduate from college and become leaders of our nation. Since its beginning in 1944, UNCF has made one truth known: a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Support UNCF as they continue supporting the dreams and hopes of 50,000 deserving students each year. Please visit uncf.org today. Happy 80th, UNCF.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump's first cabinet member was sworn in this morning. Secretary of State Marco Rubio took the oath, and he was asked on ABC's Good Morning America about how the U.S. can help bring an end to the war between Russia and Ukraine, a campaign promise from the president.
The only way to solve these things, we got to get back to pragmatism, but we also got to get back to seriousness here, and that is the hard work of diplomacy. The U.S. has a role to play here. We've been supportive of Ukraine, but this conflict has to end.
The secretary said he's not commenting on domestic political issues when asked about President Trump's decision to pardon all those convicted in connection with the January 6th Capitol riot. He said some of those people had their lives destroyed. Mexico's president responding to President Trump's threatened tariffs on goods from Mexico and Canada, saying the countries have to relate as equals, not subordinates. Bitter cold racking tens of millions around the country as snow falls in parts of the South. This is ABC News.